Are you looking for a book to boost your child's self-esteem and image? Listen to what six-time Emmy Award winner and Nobel Peace Prize nominee Shawn Duperin has to say about the Journey of Joy children's book series. She says, quote, "It's inspiring to find a children's book series that gets to the heart of why we're here and to enjoy life's journey. It is truly compelling. It reinforces your child's strong sense of self, the essence of what every parent wants for their precious child. I highly recommend," end quote. The four inspiring and beautifully illustrated books in the Journey of Joy children's book series, authored by Beth Donnelly and Dagny Grant, can be found on Amazon.com. Sharing the wisdom of positive I am statements, these books are titled I Am Enough, I Am Unique and Awesome, I Am Great, and I Am Brave. Pick up a set for the children in your life today. Just go to Amazon.com and enter Journey of Joy series. That's Journey of Joy series. Welcome to the Echoes of the Universe radio show, brought to you by Matrix Productions. Conscious conversations with Dagny Grant and Beth Donnelly, sharing thought-expanding moments to nourish your soul.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Echoes of the Soul Radio, brought to you by Matrix Productions. This is Beth Donnelly, and I'm here with my co-host, Dagny Grant, and we are really looking forward to this show with world-renowned author, public speaker, and activist for the rights of human beings and animals, Patricia Corey. She is considered a warrior for planet Earth. She's a proven sensitive. She's explored mysticism, philosophy, ancient civilizations, metaphysical healing, spirituality, and unexplained mysteries. How intriguing is all that? And she teaches on all of these subjects to enthralled audiences around the world. Patricia has been recognized as a gifted shaman by indigenous spirit teachers of the Tibetan, Mayan, and Peruvian traditions and has been embraced by the shamans of Palenque as one of the four spirit guardians of that sacred site. And we'll find out more about that when she comes on. But since 1996, she has guided travelers to sacred sites in Nepal, Tibet, Asia, Mexico, Egypt, Europe, Peru, the crop circles in England, and dolphin swims in the Azores to contemplate the potential of interspecies interaction and our heightened sensitivity to the world that surrounds us. How exciting, such compelling travel. Can't wait to hear more from Patricia. She has been called a real-life Indiana Jones by fans and readers around the world, a model of the adventurous spirit and seeker within us all. I certainly want to hear more about her adventures, but first I'd like to bring on my co-host, Dagny Grant. Hi, Dagny.
Hey, Beth. This is going to be really fun. And, you know, interspecies communication, that's certainly something that you and I are into. And love that topic. This is going to be a really fun show today. I was thinking about this earlier, and you and I have been broadcasting this show for about 3.5 years now. And in the beginning, we were pretty careful to have fairly mainstream personal development topics where, you know, the general populace could listen in and take something away that would expand their conscious living, right? And, it was all good and all beautiful and, you know, but I think it's fun that we've kind of allowed the show to evolve into letting a more physical, metaphysical meets science meets quantum mechanics kind of realm. You know, it's kind of getting into the meat and potatoes of the hologram we all kind of live in, you know, and this spectrum of the conversation is certainly where we're going to find ourselves with our guest today. I think it's really fun to be able to bring these topics to our audience. And what we're going to speak about today will be mind-blowing and spirit-enhancing to a lot of people. And so I know Beth, both of us are really grateful to have Patricia Corey on the show today. So this will be really fun.
Oh, definitely. And I haven't even really talked much about our books yet. And Patricia is an internationally acclaimed author and one of the most well-known and established authorities on the realms of the mystic, views of the world, and multidimensional reality. So she's been a key voice in the alternative media for decades and has contributed a wealth of material to the New Thought community with 11 best-selling publications published in over 20 foreign languages. And her books, The Syrian Revelations, published by North Atlantic Books, have enjoyed worldwide acclaim as a wake-up call, a material for the expanding consciousness of humankind. And her latest, The New Syrian Revelations, brings her eager readers new galactic visions upon our current events and the great shift underway. Whoa. So let's bring on to the show Patricia Corey. Hi, Patricia.
Hey, how could I possibly live up to such an introduction? Well, thank you. Thank you. I just love your introduction. Thank you so much for that. And Dagny's comment made me laugh. We're certainly going to go there today. And how excited I am that you're open to... Yes, it's wonderful to be in the realm of enough convention that people are comfortable, but I think that here we are at 2017 and the world is a different place than it was the last time I talked to you, and
it's
we have
time.
Plenty of new spaces to explore together.
Well, you're so right, Patricia, and I was wondering, could you tell our listeners, we'll just start out with a little about your personal story and what brought you to where you are today?
Okay, boy, where do I begin? I am somebody recently in an interview said, so who is Patricia Corey? And I said, I don't know. But I was being silly, but I truly do know. And that is, I am an adventurer, I am a seeker, I am a... hopefully a good influence on people when it comes to helping people face themselves, face the dark side so that they can bring it into the light and to walk the path of spirit. And I try to be a model for what I speak. And in the years of my life, I've been through two immigrations. I started out in California, and when I was 32, I decided that I wanted to live in Europe, but because I'm Italian-American, I wanted to have a taste of my Italian self, and stayed in Italy for another 30 years. So I basically have spent half of my life in America, half of my life in Italy, and then a year ago, I moved, for many reasons, to the Azores Islands, where I am currently speaking to you from. And this is an island called Sayal, which is paradise on earth. I live, as we speak, I'm looking out on about 180-degree view of ocean and valleys and a few spent volcanoes and just a beautiful, beautiful world, which I believe, and so do the locals, that this is home. So I feel that I have a very strong connection to Atlantis and that, in a way, I've come home to live the third chapter of my life out in this situation.
Wow, that just sounds heavenly where you're living now, Patricia. And you do, that's where you did some dolphin swims and things with guided travelers, isn't it?
Yes, because the reason I came here the first time in 2010 was because I was channeling a book called, you may remember it, Before We Leave You, Messages from the Great Whales and the Dolphin Being.
Right.
And, I think we might have even talked back then on your show. I can't remember. But at any rate, I felt that they were calling me into the ocean, and I had this tremendous fear of being attacked by a shark. It was a... it was an one of those phobic things that you can't explain. And all I can say is because living in California, there were so many great white shark attacks when I was young. And I built a phobia in my mind. And so I decided that, you know, in order to be with wild dolphins, I'm just going to have to overcome that fear. And also, if I was going to talk to people about being unafraid and facing their fear, then by golly, I had to jump in. So here's Pat Corey in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and I mean in the middle, jumping off a little, you know, pontoon boat with, you know, I don't know how many miles underneath me before you touch bottom. Not quite the same as, you know, jumping into the shallow waters of Bimini.
Wow.
Right into the middle of the ocean, and I was, it's the most extraordinary experience. I was surrounded by 250, you heard me, estimated 250 bottlenose dolphins, and they weren't, wild dolphins, they're on the move all the time. They were socializing, and the captain of the boat said, I don't know what you do. He said, but this doesn't happen. This is a miracle.
And wow.
2 hours, if you can imagine this, not a very accomplished swimmer, and certainly not a diver. I spent 2 hours in the open ocean with 250 dolphins until I could swim no more. And it's needless to say, it was life, absolutely life-altering. And that's how I ended up here. Isn't it amazing how we end up, how life takes us to new destinies and new experiences?
Oh, that's incredible.
Wow.
Wow. That had to be so much fun. I mean, that's like a once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-millions of people's lifetimes kind of experience. So, wowzers.
It
was my first encounter. And the captain, I hired the boat because I didn't want to be with tourists. I just wanted to, I was researching, and
right.
I knew they wanted me in the water. So, I have a little anecdote. At the time, I sent a message out to my readers and said, if you have a message, a short message that you'd like me to send to the dolphins, please send it to me. Keep it short. So I got all these wonderful messages, like one of my favorites was, please don't give up on the human race. A beautiful, lovely messages for the dolphins. And I got rice paper scroll and squid ink, and I painstakingly wrote out all these messages on this scroll in ink, squid ink. So when I jumped into the water, I was coping with being in this deep ocean, my fear of sharks, all of this, and then surrounded by so many dolphins. I can't even tell you. And
wow.
I pulled this scroll out from my wetsuit, and there were two dolphins in front of me. They were sentinels. And it was like they were checking me out before they opened up their paws to me. And I communicated telepathically. And my message was, I come in humility. I know you've called me. I come in humility to learn about your world. And they opened up. It was as if they opened the door. And I took out this scroll, and I laid it out in the water. And all this little rice paper disintegrated in the water. And bam, all these dolphins started to come. Is that amazing?
Oh, my goodness. The energy in the water must have been just phenomenal.
It was. I tell you, then the pilot of the boat said, I have never seen anything like this, Patricia. I've been out here for 30 years. I've never seen anything happen like this. I said, well, I'm blessed. I do know it. Because at one point, as I was coping with all these dolphins and my own fear, whatever, bam, I felt something hit my arm. And I said, that's it. My thought was, if this is a shark, I'm dead meat.
No.
Meat, literally. And then was a dolphin, and it swam down the length of my body, leaped out of the water, jumped back in right next to me, and looked at me and went, and swam away. And I realized it was my teacher, and that was the end of the fear.
Wow. Oh, wow. The end of the fear.
Your husband, I think when we spoke with you last, our specific focus was on your book, The Emissary. Was it around the time that you wrote The Emissary that that this occurred?
No, this was before The Emissary. It was the book before The Emissary was called Before We Leave You, Messages from the Great Wheel.
Okay.
And okay.
Okay, I had those backwards. I thought that Before We Leave You was after you wrote The Emissary, but it was the other way around, huh?
Yes, it was. Okay. Emissary was my last book, and now I'm just putting out the new one, which is, as we speak, in the process of being prepared by the publisher, North Atlantic Books.
Very exciting. Well, and we're going to actually talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, how many books have you published? Is it like more than a dozen at this point? I think, what did you say, Beth, 11 or something? Is this your 12th book?
I think including the Syrian Starseed Tarot, which has a 100-page book in it, I think this is my 14th book.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm going to ask you a little bit of a tough question here. Maybe if you had to pick one of the books that you've written to recommend to our audience to read, which one would it be and why?
Oh boy, that's a toughie.
I know.
I think from the point of view of philosophical input, probably my favorite is Atlantis Rising, The Struggle of Darkness and Light. Because that book has revolutionized the way a lot of people see the world and our place in the galaxy. And it's very, very avant-garde. But what's interesting is that in the meantime, that book came out first in about the year 1999 or 2000. In the meantime, some of the most outlandish theories in the book have come to pass or have been actually reverberated by the scientific community. So it's a very powerful book, but I have to say that my first novel is The Emissary, and I really would love people to read that because it's such an adventure.
And so, yeah, so fantastic and heartwarming and just a great message, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, we recommend everybody to read all of her books. And the link, by the way, you know what, after the show, if you want to check out her website is www.patriciacorey.com. That link is on the website where you're listening to this show right now, so you can just click on that link, patriciacorey.com. So, yeah, you know, very exciting. The whole concept of the story of Atlantis and the various theories around it as it relates to, you know, terrestrial beings being part of that experience on this planet and or extraterrestrial. I don't know if I said terrestrial, but, yeah, you know, there's just so many different tales that have been told about that time it's a fascinating thing to consider, isn't it?
There's a fascinating thing.
Sorry.
No, I was just gonna say there's a lot of fascinating things about Patricia.
Oh, indeed.
I would like to say that, you know, in my years of bringing forward that information, of course, there's been always the resistance that it was just a myth, and it's interesting that at this moment there is so much happening archaeologically on this planet. Egypt is bursting forward with a new pharaonic tomb, a new pyramid, new mummies. In Abydos, they just unearthed a building. Abydos being a place I go all the time, where there's a mural of wooden ships depicted on the wall, which is unlike any other Egyptian design that we've seen. So there are new stories emerging all the time. And actually, I don't think they're new stories. I think they're old stories that have been buried and forgotten, possibly deliberately, because the powers that be don't want the storyline to change. And I'd like to just take that a step further and tell you that you may have heard of the Bosnia Pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the gentleman who, I can never pronounce his name, Aganovich, I'm so embarrassed, I can't pronounce his name, but it'll come to me. Sam Osmaganovich, who is the archaeologist chief at Bosnia, told me in an interview that the Egyptian antiquities came there and were very annoyed at what he was doing because one of them said, you know, this isn't possible. And he said, sorry? Because the Bosnia pyramids predate, according to scientific analysis, predate the Great Pyramid. And this is a big conundrum for science and for archaeology because the Egyptians want ownership of the history. And so he told me that one of the archaeologists from Egypt that supported him got fired from the archaeology hierarchy in Egypt. So there is a definitive need or desire on the part of the authority that writes the history or that sells the conventional idea of history that we don't go making waves and changing the timeline. But it's there. It's coming up. It's surfacing.
Well,
everywhere we're seeing new developments. And before I close this little bit of a rant, I'd like to share with you that where I live now, these people know that this is Atlantis. I mean, they call this island, the locals call the island the Lost Atlantis. And there's Atlantis Pizza, Atlantis Car Rental, Atlantis Laundry.
Okay.
They get it.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, whenever there is a historical site, then there is also money. And once you start messing with people's money, history becomes less important. And, you know, things get kind of go awry.
Yes, and people, you know, there's power in holding the wisdom away from people.
Yes.
There's power in that.
Yes.
But the bottom line is, if we cut away all of that conversation, the bottom line is there's more to civilization than a few thousand years. And
right.
You know, in Atlantis Rising, I bring forward the story of Atlantis as a 100,000-year civilization with peaks and valleys and, of course, the end of Atlantis ending in catastrophe. But there was the glorious Atlantis. So I ask people, if you look what we have done to our civilization in 20 years, I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me that there are 20-year-old people on this planet that don't know what life was before a cell phone and a computer.
Right.
Yeah.
Imagine 10,000 years, 20,000 years, 100,000 years. Surely we have had peaks and valleys of civilization, of technology, of developed wisdom, all of it in these peaks and valleys of civilization. And that's some of the information that's in Atlantis Rising is about that.
And wisdom is so relevant in history. We just can't forget about that. And I'm going to take us another way a little bit to your travels because I'm so interested in the fact that you became one of the four spirit guardians of the sacred site of the shamans in Palenque. And I was wondering if you'd take us through that story and let us know how that actually came to pass.
Well, that's a fantastic story, and I love to tell it. It's a bit long, so I'll try to be as concise as possible. In the year 2007, I organized a trip to the Maya lands, and I kept hearing my guides tell me, gather the 13. Now, in Atlantis Rising, it talked about the 13 crystal skulls, so I automatically assumed that they meant gather the 13. What am I supposed to get, a bunch of crystal skulls? Okay. Gather the 13. They kept every morning, every night, gather the 13. Sorry, gather the 12. Gather this. Bring together the 12. Bring together the 12. So I started collecting crystal skulls, and just getting 12 crystal skulls of very decent size proportion through the airport is a story in itself, but it's not. There's not enough time to tell you.
I bet.
It is so unbelievable that I got 12 crystal skulls through the Rome control and through Mexico too. That in itself is just remarkable. But I also I was going to perform a ceremony at Palenque with these skulls with the group. I didn't know how. I didn't know why. I just knew. So the guide that was taking us on this journey was very macho. He was a control freak, and he wanted to know exactly what I had planned. And I said, I don't know. He said, what do you mean you don't know? You're talking about a ceremony. You don't know what you're doing? I said, I don't know. I just know that the 13th will appear. He said, what? Because according to Atlantis Rising, the 12 crystal skulls brought together created the energy of a holographic 13th skull, which was a great cosmic computer. Okay?
Oh, wow.
So I just kept hearing this, bring the 12, get the 12 together. And I did. And at Palenque, while the group was checking in to the hotel, to investigate the area to see where I wanted to do this ceremony. And I knew immediately where it was because I could see tubes of light coming out of the earth into the sky, and I later found, it later was validated to me by the shaman that this is where 5 million Mayans ascended.
Back wow. Then.
Purple tubes I saw, so that was nice that he confirmed it. But anyway, what happened is while I was looking, this man went out to the front of the entrance to Palenque, where there were some Lokandu tribes. These are the last pure generation of natives that were related to Pakal Gotan, who was the great spiritual leader of the Mayas.
Mm-hmm.
So this man said, what are you doing here? How nice to see you. And he said, I've got this woman here. She's got a group. I don't know. I don't know what she's doing. And he said, she's going to do a ceremony, the crystal skulls tomorrow. And this man said, what? She's got crystal skulls. So out comes the shaman, his son, who is the guardian of Palenque. Kayum's the name. And he says, what did you say? And the man repeats, I have this woman, she's... And he said, where is she from? And he said, Italy. And Kayum said, are you sure? He said, yeah, she's from Italy. And where are the people from? And he said, all over the world. Are you sure she's from Italy? And finally, the third time, he said, well, actually, she's from California. And this shaman smiled, said, I've been waiting for her.
Wow.
Yeah. That night, I was going to give a lecture on crystal skulls to the group. And instead, she came to hear me lecture. Here's this shaman, and the real deal, the real shaman, who is the guardian of Palenque. And, I mean, all the other tribal people defer to him. He's the man. And he's got this gigantic quartz crystal the size of a human head on the table. And people are like, what? And I had told them, all I know is when I bring the 12 crystal skulls, the 13th will appear. So there was the 13th.
Oh, my.
And we had this extraordinary ceremony where he had me carry this skull in. And there was another skull that he brought, which he said, hold this, Patricia, this littler skull. And when I held it, I almost ricocheted out of my body. And I said to myself, this is the real skull. The quartz one is a camouflage. This is the power right here. And during the ceremony, he handed me the skull. I said, well, but, and he said, take it. This has to be with you now. So that was the beginning of a relationship with this man. And the next time I went to Palenque, he said, I want you to come back. We have work to do. And I said, okay, and I can be back in a few months. So I went back. And it began a very powerful experience of being not indoctrinated, but let's say being purified or being accepted by the tribal elders. Oh, what an experience. Yeah, he baptized me in the sacred fountain, which was remarkable. And finally, he asked me, would you be one of the four guardians of Palenque? I almost fell off the rock.
I bet.
He told the group that he had had a vision that a woman would come from the north and she would bring 12 crystal skulls and that she would be the fourth person to guard the temple. So I was...
yep.
So that's the
amazing
story about that.
Oh, yeah, that's an amazing story, Patricia. Thank you so much. You know, while we're on the idea of sacred sites, do you have a particular story about one of the other sites that was very meaningful to you in a transformational way?
Well, I have so many. Every time I do one of these trips, something extraordinary happens. So, you know, as they say, you've got the time, I've got the beer.
How did you hear that? What was that?
Oh, that was beautiful.
I can tell you that.
Well, you know, a lot of you, I think that you have had some experiences that are out of the ordinary of your average, you know, Earth citizen. And so, you know, I think that any of your stories, you know, that are you know, really kind of extraordinary and fascinating would be interesting to our audience. So if you can think of one in particular that folks might really appreciate, that would be fun.
How about the crop circles?
Ooh, crop circles.
Yeah, how about that?
I have something that I prefer to talk about first.
Okay.
The Temple of Abydos in Egypt is the most extraordinary place. And back in the day, let's say 1996 was a very explosive year for me. I was really having remarkable breakthroughs in my spiritual quest. And I went to Egypt twice. I went to Tibet twice in 1 year, Peru,
wow,
and Mexico. So when I went to Abydos, and it later led me to write the book Where Pharaohs Dwell, I was in this temple, and a local man there was like my brother. He was really helpful in helping me get private time and explore the energies of this place. And I immediately felt that there was something about this particular place that was different than any other place I'd ever been, in anywhere I'd ever been, and realized that it was truly a multidimensional portal. Now, what I mean by that is, this terminology gets thrown around quite a lot in our circles, but when you are in a place where you have proof that something has shifted and then shifted back, that's interesting because I love to balance out the metaphysical aspect with science. This is one of the reasons why I do have also men following my work, because there is that aspect, that grounded quality to what I bring forward. So I'm in this temple, and I actually stayed in this little town for 3 weeks. So I had time every day to go there. This was not with a group. This was on my own. And I go in the second day. And Abydos Temple has 7 chapels in it. Each one is to one of the Egyptian gods. So there's the Isis Chapel, Osiris, the whole 7 main gods of the Egyptian pantheon. I sit down in one of these chapels because my plan was every day I'll go to one chapel and meditate there and I'll get the vibe and whatever. And I look up at the wall, and I see very strange glyphs. And I see an image of, it's too complicated to explain what I saw. Just to say that I saw an image that was unusual and involved my one of the gods that I feel most related to, which is Sekhmet. So,
which is what?
Sekhmet, the goddess of fire.
Oh, okay.
She's really
very good. Thank you.
She's the goddess of female power, and because the Egyptian male hierarchy didn't like women with power, they called her the goddess of war.
Of course.
So it's really interesting. If you really analyze history, you look at this, and Sekhmet is depicted as being the bringer of fire, the goddess of war and destruction. But what she really is the epitome of female power. So I like her. So I'm sitting there looking at this image. Oh, and then next to it, I see the statue of Maat, which is the goddess who weighs the soul on the scale as it passes into the Duat. At any rate, one of these images was quite breathtaking, and it was so small. I remember looking at this feather going, how did the artist manage to make such a fine piece of sculpture that I can see each feather? And it was miniature on this wall. Now, I am not the kind of person that goes into the Louvre and sits in front of a painting for 8 hours. I don't have that kind of... I look, it's beautiful, I move on. But I was fascinated to the point that I lost all this time in there. And when I came out, I went back to the place I was staying, which was a bed and breakfast with this English guy. And I told him about this image. And he said, where did you see it? I said, it was in the second chapel. He said, I saw it too, only once. But it was in the fourth chapel. I said, what do you mean you saw it once? And he said, it's not there. I said, what are you talking about? I just saw it. And said, come on, come with me. We go back. None of it's there. It's a completely different room. None of the art that I saw was there. No feather, no nothing. And I go, wait a minute. Hold on. I must have been in the wrong room. And painstakingly went through each of these chapels, knowing I had been sitting in this second chapel. Completely gone. So
wow. He
told me that he too saw it once and never saw it again and almost got crazy trying to see it again. And I started to ask a few of the guards and this friend of mine, this brother, this Egyptian brother that I refer to, and he said, I saw it once. I said, where did you see it? And he said, in the first chapel. I said, what do you mean you saw it once but you didn't see it again? To make a long story short, certain people have seen it, and then it's never to be seen again. And the reason is because somehow this chapel, this temple, emerges into another dimension.
Hmm.
I mean, it's not there, but we've seen it. We've all seen it, but it's not there. So
that's like laying something down in the fifth dimension and not being able to find it in the third.
I know, bummer, right?
Right.
But, you know, I love it because this is such a proof that something quite remarkable is going on there, because it's one thing, okay, I'm a psychic, it's one thing if I have this experience. It's another if 10 different people have had it.
Right.
Right? So I found
right. That
to be very
exciting.
Right,
and then the energy of it is so much more strong. Wow, that's a fascinating story.
Yes, very much so. So, Patricia, then... have you found these portals in each sacred site you've gone to, or was it just in the one in Egypt?
I have never been in a more powerful vortex than Abydos that I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, let's not split hairs. I've been in, you know, Peru, I've been all over Egypt, Tibet. I think that when you, that these temples, powerful temples and sacred places are built deliberately on energy vortices. And that's
mm-hmm.
why you'll find a church that's built on top of a temple, that's built on top of an ancient mound or whatever, because the energy's in the earth. Or
right.
perhaps the vortex is where the earth is, or where the sky connects, or whatever. But it's not the building. It's the earth and sky that create that vortex. And I've been in many, many of them. Many.
The earth and the sky create the vortex. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's like the crop circles you asked me about. There's all these theories. There's all people claiming they know exactly how they're made. But any responsible crop circle investigator, I believe I'm one, will tell you that nobody really knows how they're made. The guess is out because it's a different experience for everyone. And there are people that claim they made them physically. There are people that claim they saw lights zooming around. There are all manner of explanations. The bottom line is, I believe that there's something galactic imprinting the Earth energetically. And the Earth is interacting, let's call it, with the sky or with the intelligence that's sending down that formula, that information from with which the Earth interacts. That's the best I can do. But I don't know.
Well, they're like messages. They're like messages that have, you know, sacred geometry and some of them, it's just not reasonable to think that a bunch of guys with boards on the walking around on the ground created these designs. It's just not. It's not. I mean,
I'll tell
come
you what,
on.
I started going to crop circles in 1996. And the first one that I went into was the Julia set, and that was so mind-blowing. This crop circle was 151 circles in Fibonacci sequence, which is absolutely sacred geometry.
There's no way a bunch of guys in Iowa with boards created that stuff. I mean, it's just silly.
Let me say this, as much as I can be objective about this, there are some people who have become very talented at making crop circles because in the end, you know, you put a peg in the middle of a circle, you take a long rope and you walk around and you can do a circle. So there are people who have spent a lot of time learning how to do this. But
sure,
as the theory in High Council says, you know, before you poo-poo these guys, they're answering our messages.
They're instruments, and they don't even have communication, and they don't even know it.
Yeah, even if they...
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's what the council said. They said, you know, they're answering our messages, so, you know, don't get all hung up on it, because we are communicating with the Earth, and if people are taking the time to get out in the field of little light and redesign something that has meaning, that has numerical precision, we love it. It means somebody's getting a message.
That's awesome. That's a fun way to think of it. I appreciate that way of considering it, because it's that it's not some sort of a communication from the galaxy is just wild to me.
What the Syrians are saying is that we're sending them down, and there are also humans who are sending them back.
Right.
So you've got this dual thing, more toward 1996 through the early 2000s. There was a different energy in the field. I mean, I went every summer. I was just blown. I was obsessed with crop circles.
I bet.
In the case of the first one, which is where I had an enormous breakthrough, I mean, first of all, these 150 circles came down in the span of something between 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. And we know this because a private flight guy who flew over that area was a very dense touristic area because it was just across the way from Stonehenge. So this pilot was flying a passenger over taking pictures of Stonehenge. When he came back 45 minutes later, 151 circles were in the week. Now,
wow.
It's
wow.
One thing to say that some guys in the middle of the night have a few beers and go out into the field and make some wonky-looking crop circles. It's another to take a picture of the Julia set and ask yourself, how possibly could any human people get out into a field in broad daylight across the street from Stonehenge, where the most frequented road in England in the summer is that road, because it's a thoroughfare
right.
to getting through. And boom, 151 Fibonacci sequence circles in the shape of a spiral.
Wow. That is so much fun. What a great, I love that story. That's amazing.
And, you know, there was a lot going on in that crop circle. I mean, there were plasma bowls. I saw men in black there. There were Tibetan monks. There were priests from everywhere. I mean, something happened that called people into that crop circle, and I was blessed to be one of them.
Man. You know, one of the things that I read was about your work is that you've guided people, you know, through these sacred sites and around the world to kind of open minds and hearts to the potential of interspecies interaction. And I wonder if you'd speak with our, you know, you had that great story for us about the dolphins. Are there other interspecies interaction communications that you can speak to? And when this refers to interspecies interactions, is it not only referring to interspecies that are on this planet, but also out in the universe, other life forms?
Yeah, absolutely. I am. First of all, when you are an empathic human being, you can't possibly ignore the energy of any other living thing. So when you are a real empath, and I am, even a plant speaks to you. I mean, my plants actually speak to me. I know now I'm getting on the fringe of your audience.
They're ready.
You know, okay.
There are people doing experiments with plants, hooking them up at Domenhur in Torino in Italy. There's an organization that lives in kind of isolated from society, and they do a lot of really interesting work there, Domenhur. And they're hooking up stereo equipment and very sensitive acoustic equipment to trees and plants, and they're recording the music. These plants are singing.
Right. Yeah, I've actually seen that on film. One of my favorite videos is the movie The Secret Life of Plants, where it speaks to these experiments on plants, and they're very intelligent. People just don't even have any idea how it's so such a gift.
The thing is that if we turn off the chattering, distracted mind and sit in a forest and really listen without the cell phone, without all of the distraction that's deliberately taking humankind away from the gift of what we really have here, the beauty of nature. If we do that, if we can find ourselves there, then you start to listen to the music of the birds, the sway of the trees, the sound of the way air moves across a branch or a leaf. The insect world. It's a symphony. And we've just unplugged because we're plugged into this horrible grid that I don't like very much. And so my answer to you is, yes, I speak to plants. I feel their pain. I planted some bulbs about a month ago, and the flowers are coming out now. And every morning it's like, are you there? Oh, I can't wait to. And I can see these plants wanting to believe me. Yes, yes, we're coming. Hang in there. Hang in. And it's the same with animals, with our own pets, of course. There's a fine line between what is a trained reaction and what is a telepathic interaction. And some people have the ability to hear the emotional telepathic message of an animal. And that's a great gift, and I do. And, you know, then there's just the sheer willing. Example, I took a group of people to Egypt recently. We got off the bus. There was a dog. There were wild dogs full of ticks and horrible things. So thirsty. And everybody trudged off the bus, all these spiritual people, and went to get in the temple. And here's this poor dog. And I said, you guys go ahead, and I got out a bottle of mineral water and sat down and came up with a Katie Wampus type of bowl, enough of a bowl to be able to collect the water. And this terrified dog came closer to me, and then another dog and another one, a wild dog. And the guards at the temple said, stop, they're dangerous. And I just sat down on the floor with these dogs and gave them water. And I thought, wow, why can't we do this? How
right.
come nobody, this spiritual group, these highly spiritual people, had any sense of maybe that would be a good thing to do? And the Egyptians, of course, they don't get it. Because they have no clue about animals. They just don't care. But
right.
Patricia, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just love what you said about as an empath, you can't ignore any living thing. And Doggy and I feel so strongly about communication with animals, and we both do that. And I feel empathic toward trees and flowers. Everything you were talking about really relates to both of us because we feel that same kind of thing. And I know that once my husband and I were traveling in Greece, and there were that was that same kind of situation where the dogs were just not cared for and just running wild. And I got to thinking the same thing you did, like what is it that people can't see that these dogs need to be cared for? But, you know, I guess it's up to us, right? Everything's up to us. That's what it was up to you. You brought some water to this dog. It's very beautiful.
I think that we're not taking care of each other either, let's be honest.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're not
right.
doing a very good job in a lot of ways on this planet, and there's so much room to improve. And so, you know, it's not an easy life being an empath because you feel the suffering. And,
yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be any other way, but, you know, when I drive by and see a horse, you know, tied up to a rope with about a foot of distance, I feel the suffering. It goes right through my body. And, you know,
yeah.
I'd like to not have to feel it in order to help, but I do. So that's who I am. And as long as I can, I'm trying to help people, educate people on you know, how beautiful it is. How beautiful it is for a child to have a dog or a kitty. It teaches them so much. And, you know, we're seeing more and more images now on Facebook, for example, of the wonderful things that dogs are doing, the way they nurture little babies. I saw a dog yesterday putting the blanket on the little baby, pulling the blanket.
I know, isn't that adorable? Oh.
Did you think that?
Yes, so adorable.
So cute. And it's just, you know, take a look at what life can be when you are tuned in to what the animal kingdom can be. And here is going to be a subject which I always end up discussing, which is, of course, the less meat you eat, the more sensitive you become to this.
Right.
And
yeah, the density, different densities of food is always an interesting topic for sure. You know, our hour is going so fast, it's just like wild. And I know that we did want to ask you a little bit about your new book that is coming out, the New Syrian Revelations, and I guess one of the things that I do want to just, you know, get your thoughts about a little bit is the one of the things I saw that the book is up for sale. I don't know if it's pre-sale or if it's actually out already on Amazon, but one of the things that the description says, and I'm quoting, is her messages, speaking of you, from distant realms empower readers to look at the dark side to understand it, but to focus on the light for all humankind and the earth. And this is something that Beth and I discuss pretty often, is, you know, that sometimes those of us, you know, in the metaphysical kind of teachers tribe, advocate, some people advocate not acknowledging the darkness at all in terms of it, you know, creating a mirror in the, you know, a law of attraction kind of realm. And Beth and I tend to agree with what is written here about that, you know, that contrast is intended. And if it's ignored, then we kind of lose the richness of the 3D experience that is multifaceted, that kind of allows everything to expand. And so we're wondering if you could expound a little bit for our audience what your thoughts are about that, looking at the dark side to understand it while focusing on the light.
Yes, I'd like to talk about that. Thank you for this question. I am an advocate of being in center as much as we can be, to be in the now, which would be not in the past or the future, and to be in the center, which is not in the dark or the – of course, we want to be in the light, but not to be so obsessed with that idea of the law of attraction that you can only think about the light and love and peace and harmony that – creates, in my experience, a sense of fear of anything else. And fear is what hooks you to what it is the fear is about. So there are two reasons why I am an advocate of this information. First of all, because you can understand the darkness and be objective. You don't have to be pulled into it. You can objectively look at it to help understand why it is, what creates it, and since I'm a spirit warrior, what I can do to help raise the energy to the light. Because the law of attraction idea is wonderful, however, I'm not only concerned about me. I'm not only concerned about my life, what I can manifest for me. I'm concerned about the planet. I'm concerned about people that are suffering. How can I possibly
right.
sit here, be blissed out about how wonderful my life is and not care that people are suffering somewhere else? If
right.
we are so encapsulated that all we're doing is working on ourselves, which in essence, of course, we all metaphysicians understand that in the end it's the I am consciousness.
Right.
So I understand that if I'm good, my world is good. But I really believe that I can impact people somehow, help with the darkness, somehow bring light to that. But I have to understand it first, and I most definitely have to not be afraid to look at it.
I love the way you worded that, Patricia, to kind of look at it like a scientist rather than from a place of fear, to look at it as, wow, isn't that fascinating?
Well, it's like when I jumped into the ocean to face my fear of sharks.
Right.
I'm so much better for it. And what did I get? 250 dolphins to help me understand that, you know, I was being rewarded for facing that fear. But when...
Yeah, that's wonderful.
When it's like, oh, no, I don't want to bring that into my manifestation. I have a problem with that, because that's fine, great. That's your way of dealing with your life. But what are you doing for the world? Do you care about anyone else except your own insular reality? And that was
right.
in your family or whatever. And so it's an ongoing debate, this one. But my message for people is, don't be afraid to look at the dark. Help disarm it. Help send light into it. But you've got to understand it first. And you can do that by being an observer, objective observer, without being entangled in it, without giving it energy, just observing it. And that's
Oh, that's great. That's great. Just observe it. Don't get entangled in it. I love that. That's perfect.
Acknowledging it existing and observing it takes away the fear, which means you can't be entrained by it, because you are
right.
allowing yourself to look, to not be affected, and to examine what you can do to help raise the energy.
Right. And then all of the positive energy that we've created around our own lives can be extended by sending that light into whatever the problem is that we've identified. So I think it's a perfect match.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And all of the Syrian information has been that way. The books have presented problems that face us. And sometimes people will say, I really didn't want to hear about that. I mean, light beings should only talk about light. And that's ridiculous.
Exactly. That's my point. Exactly.
First of all, it's the shortest conversation in town. I mean, great, love, life, peace. Then what about the duality that we live in? What about the great theater that we've come into to experience?
Right.
And the choices that we make and how all of this takes us up the spiral. of experience. I don't want to be afraid to look at that.
Exactly.
No, really. I mean, that's the whole point of empathy, and empathy is so important in the world today. That's for sure.
That's right.
Right, and the opportunity to work with people to actually kind of shift their emotion around things that they see as dark, and get them to, you know, to help them to understand that it's perceptual as well, and what a gift to be able to work with that kind of thing. Through that kind of thing with people, you know, if all we ever told people was, well, just ignore it, just pretend it doesn't exist. I don't think the effective nature of that kind of advice is very lasting.
Well, the problem is that it feeds an isolationist society where we just make our world pretty and happy and positive, but, you know, have we lost our ability to care about people who are not as fortunate as we are? Have we lost the plot on this? Are we anesthetized to this point that we don't care? And it's easier not to care. It's much easier not to care. But that's not who I am, and I think that's not who a lot of people are who are aware of the difficulties that so many people are in this world, and we all have our difficulties. So, you know, it's a finding balance between being able to look at it and say, okay, this, how can I possibly affect change here? And still keep enough joy and positivity in your life so that it doesn't drag you down. And this is the work of a spirit warrior.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, Patricia, in order to close off this discussion, I'd love it if you could give us one definitive thought that you'd like our listeners to take away today.
You know, I think one of the most beautiful quotes that's ever been said is, be the light that you seek. Be the truth that you seek. Honor that. Honor them both. And remember that we are the ones that we are searching for. So we're the ones that we're waiting for. Let's get to work here and make the world a better place.
Beautiful. We're the ones. Yeah. So true. Thank you so much for being our guest today, Patricia. It has been an amazing and just compelling time listening to you.
I can't believe it.
Exciting
really.
Adventures. I know. So to our listeners out there, thanks for joining us. And, you know, we should give this link, too, if you'd like to read or hear more about Patricia Corey, go to the link that's on our radio site. And I think, Dagny, do you have the actual link? I have it here,
www. Absolutely. It's her name, Doc, and the link is on the radio site. They can just click on it, patriciacorey.com. And go to Amazon and check out her books. I think I may have the link to the Amazon site actually even on the show site. Patricia Corey.
Yeah,
we've been speaking with Patricia Corey, everybody, and she is a world-renowned author, public speaker, activist for the rights of human beings and animals, and a warrior for planet Earth. And this has been so much fun. Thank you again so much, Patricia. This has been great.
Thank you both, and sorry about those earlier attempts that I did getting on the air with you. Thank you for
No problem. No problem.
It was all just in anticipation for this show to unfold, so all perfect. Thank you again. Yeah, thank you again, and as Beth said, thanks to our audience. We always appreciate you, and hope that you'll tune in again next week on Echoes of the Soul Radio, brought to you by Matrix Productions. And until next time, peace.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Echoes of the Universe. Join us again for conversations that inspire you to realize your endless possibilities. Same time, same station, same universe.